Hi folks, this is Tony for aminutetomidnight.com. Please make sure you subscribe to us at our website, aminutetomidnight.com. Go down the right-hand side of the website page and enter your email address where it says subscribe to blog. Well, the world's in a crazy spiral at this point in time. Economic spiral, it's going to continue to get worse, I believe, and rapidly probably. And there is the threat of the escalation of war with the Ukraine and potentially Taiwan at some point. There's so many things that I could pinpoint. But you've got to wonder, well, you don't really need to wonder. The obvious answer's there. Why the world is in the situation going down the tubes the way it is, when you realise that almost anybody in any position of authority and power at this point has gone through Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders School. Now, while I don't actually believe that Klaus Schwab is anywhere near the top of the pile, he is the face of the World Economic Forum, the one that people see, just as Bill Gates is the face of medical tyranny that you can see. And Bill Gates actually went through the School of Young Global Leaders, as did Mark Zuckerberg, as did Elon Musk, as did Sergey Brin. And I will play you a clip shortly of him. And Jeff Bezos did as well. And these people are touted as being the richest people in the world. Well, probably only because the truly richest people in the world don't publicize how much wealth that they actually have. So these are just those that are the face of the wealth of the elite. But none of these people, I believe, are anywhere near the top of the pile, not even Klaus Schwab. Now, people can speculate who is at the top of all of this, some faceless person. Some people would say that it's the Rothschild family. Other people would say that it's the Vatican and the Black Pope, the Jesuits. The truth is we actually don't really know, because it is possible that there are even others that like to stay in the shadows that call the shots even more than they do. But it's also entirely possible that Lucifer or Satan controls the strings of a group of people in this global conspiracy, and that there's no one particular person or even tiny little group of people that are right at the top, but a larger base for the conspiracy that is bringing the world to its knees at this point in time. It's not happening by accident. It's all a plan, and it's following a script, so to speak, even though I believe God can overthrow the script and stop it from flowing the way that the demonic realm wants it and that these people in a power and authority want. But all the same, it's like we need to see this picture for what it is. And I just want to play you a few clips to show you some aspects of why we are in this mess, when you realize how many puppets there are of the Luciferian elite and ultimately Lucifer that are in control of the big decision-making and the push in many, many areas of society and in the world in general today. I actually think there's a real danger when people try to pinpoint the whole global New World Order type conspiracy on one group. Some people would say it's all a Zionist conspiracy. I don't believe it is all a Zionist conspiracy. Other people would say it's all the Jesuits, it's a Jesuit conspiracy, and I don't believe it's that either. It's ultimately a Luciferian conspiracy that probably uses both of these groups to achieve its ends, the ends of its master, who is not an earthly master. And I don't believe in the Khazarian theory either, by the way. I believe there are good people that are Jewish, and there are bad people as well in power that are of Jewish descent. That's pretty obvious. But there is a conspiracy that is being run from, I believe, the fallen angels, and they're using men from many different groups. I don't believe it's all Islamic either. Some other people would say it's all, you know, there. But no, I believe that the Master is a fallen angel and he uses all of these groups to achieve what he wants. And we will see the outpouring of God's wrath upon all of the people that are involved in, you know, this illegitimate conspiracy to take over the world in terms of a one world government. And when Jesus returns, that'll be that for them. For example, with the Vatican versus the Rothschilds, this was an 1834 edition of The Friend published in Philadelphia, which was a religious and literary journal. And it says, there are many symptoms that the day is not far distant. There are unequivocal evidences in the present situation of the Roman state that a change is at hand. The government is bankrupt. That's the Vatican. It has only been carried on for some time by means of loans, of which it is not able to pay even the interest. For the last loan of the 3.5 million, Duke Torlonia and Prince Piombino, two of the richest citizens, become sureties to Baron Rothschild, and it is understood that the contents of the Vatican are made over to them as security. And by the way, I've been sent a very good new book by David Alan Rivera called Manifest Destiny, Endgame of the Elite, which I'm working my way through. It's quite a long book, but I'm slowly working my way through it. And he has some interesting things to say in there about the Rothschilds and how they gained their fortune and so on. And also in terms of, he says this, the Rothschild name figures prominently in all the narratives of the Illuminati, yet there really isn't any direct evidence tying them to the group or their activities. They were touted as the heart and soul of the group, but they were one of a number of international bankers, part of the elite, who would have a huge influence on the world. On page 113 of David's book, he states, in 1913, the family fortune of the House of Rothschilds was estimated to be worth over $2 billion. That was a lot of money back then, and I don't believe they've lost any of it. They've gained more. There was another quote here. He says, Werner Sombart, in his book The Jews in Modern Capitalism, said that from 1820 on it was the age of Rothschild, and concluded that there was only one power in Europe, and that is Rothschild. A dozen other banks are his underlings. In 1844 political novel Cummingsby by Benjamin Disraeli, who became the British Prime Minister in 1868, a character known as Sidonia, based on Lord Lionel Nathan de Rothschild, whose family Disraeli had become close friends with in the early 1840s, says that the world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes. So that's just a little bit on that. Okay, now to the clips. First off, this was Sergey Brin, the founder of Google, with Klaus Schwab at Davos in 2017.
We talk a lot about the fourth industrial revolution, and I have written a book 1 year ago. When I look at the contents, I have the feeling such a lot is already outdated. What was considered a year ago science fiction is already reality. Some people would say, when we sit here again, you came over 10 years ago as one of our young global leaders. For the first time here, when we sit again together in 10 years, we may much more talk about the biological revolution. And of course, then there's a combination of the biological and the digital revolution. Which,
you know, you've seen what CRISPR, for example, has allowed, you know, biologists across all disease categories to use that kind of a tool. And it's just a more general kind of biochemistry innovation. And genomics has obviously brought us a lot of innovation there broadly.
Can you imagine that in 10 years when we are sitting here, we have an implant in our brains, and I can immediately feel, because you all will have implants, I can, and we measure your brain waves, And I can immediately tell you how the people react, or I can feel how the people react to your answers. Is it imaginable?
I think that is imaginable. I think I think you know, you can imagine that. You can imagine, well, you're going to be sort of transplanted into, you know, the internet, virtual, so to speak, to live forever in a digital realm. You know, you can imagine that, you know, you just in your biological incarnation are going to live to be some, you know, very long age. I think it is almost impossible to predict. You know, ask these kinds of questions about the future. What does it mean to be human in the future? What does it mean to be an individual versus society? Kind of where are we going in the long term? I mean, these are deep and powerful and fundamental philosophical questions, yeah, but I don't know that we are equipped to answer them.
I think it's premature because we don't know yet how the technology will look like. But one fear which I have heard is that technology now is, and digital technologies mainly have an analytical power. Now we go into a predictive power, and we have seen the first examples, and your company very much involved into it. But then the next step could be to go into a prescriptive mode, which means you do not even have to have elections anymore, because you can already predict what predict, and afterwards you can say, why do we need elections? Because we know what the result will be. Can you imagine such a world?
Well, you might then further ask, well, why do we need to have, you know, elected leaders at all? Yeah, because you might as well have all the decisions made. Yeah. I think that's, once again, I mean, you're venturing into, I think, profound questions. You know, you can ask also, what will we actually want? I mean, we have a set of values and desires today that are probably pretty different than, you know, before the Industrial Revolution, and different still than before the Agrarian Revolution. And we might continue to evolve. And
so you should be able to see quite clearly that Klaus Schwab's goal for the human race is transhumanism. And Sergey Brin sounds like he is on that same page. And of course, he was trained up by Klaus Schwab, as I mentioned earlier. Now, here are two other people who were trained up in Klaus Schwab's School of Young Global Leaders in New York. This is Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand, and Emmanuel Macron of France.
Today, I'm happy to also announce that New Zealand, Twitter, Microsoft, and the United States are launching a new initiative under the Christchurch call, the Algorithms Partnership. Working with an open-source non-profit organisation called Open Mind, the partnership will develop and test groundbreaking privacy-enhancing software infrastructure to address those challenges and help us move forward under our core work. The Christchurch Call Algorithms Partnership is committed to supporting this work so that we can empower research that will help us build safer platforms and more effective interventions. Our intention is that these technologies will be made available to the whole Christchurch Core community and beyond. The technology, once tested and proven in the core context, could open up a new field of algorithmic research and much wider application.
After the terrible Christchurch attack, we launched together in Paris in May 2019 this initiative. The objective was to work with governments, civil society organizations, academics and businesses, all the stakeholders really dealing with online content. This is an essential discussion, and our challenge is that this is a space where we, our children, are in our everyday life, and how can we prevent violent content to proliferate on the internet? And this is what made the enactment of the Digital Services Act in the European Union possible, to protect our citizens.
So they're talking about stopping violent terrorist organizations using the internet. to forward their goals and so forth, which, okay, that sounds fair enough on the surface because none of us likes violent terrorist organisations and so forth. We would like to see them gone for sure. But there's more, and there's more underlying. So just take a listen to this.
To protect our citizens and the context of the war in Ukraine and the proliferation of disinformation and online propaganda, which often leads to violence, shows how this discussion is important. Since 2019, Prime Minister recorded this fact, we have had real progress. And now we want to go further, as the Prime Minister just said. We want to really fight propaganda and disinformation by multiplying the number of positive actions. So there are several steps. First of all, we want to work on algorithm. It's something that has been launched a couple of months ago. There's an agreement between New Zealand and the US and Twitter. We really want to have an algorithm partnership. We want to share information so as to be as efficient as possible with all the stakeholders. So many technical arguments were presented to us, but some technical work is being carried out. Second aspect, this has to do with artificial intelligence, be it social media or messaging services, whether they use algorithm or not. We know for well that using artificial intelligence, you can really prevent violent content and terrorists.
So they're using violent extremists as an excuse to censor free speech. So anything that becomes against the official narrative can be claimed to be disinformation, misinformation, and taken down, and they want big tech to do it for them through artificial intelligence, algorithms, and so forth. It is plain and simple control, controlling free speech and controlling what the population is allowed to hear and allowed to see. This is from Fox News. New Zealand Prime Minister condemned for calling to regulate free speech as a weapon of war at the UN.
This week we launched an initiative alongside companies and non-profits to help improve research and understanding of how a person's online experiences are curated by automated processes. This will also be important in understanding more about mis- and disinformation online, a challenge that we must, as leaders, address. How do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists? How do you ensure the human rights of others are upheld when they are subjected to hateful and dangerous rhetoric and ideology? The weapons may be different, but the goals of those who perpetuate them is often the same: to cause chaos and reduce the ability of others to defend themselves, to disband communities, to collapse the collective strength of countries who work together. But we have an opportunity here to ensure that these particular weapons of war do not become an established part of warfare. In these times, I'm acutely aware of how easy it is to feel disheartened. We are facing many battles on many fronts, but there is cause for optimism, because for every new weapon we face, there is a new tool to overcome it. For every attempt to push the world into chaos is a collective conviction to bring us back to order. We have the means. We just need the collective will.
Independent journalist Glenn Greenwald slammed New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern as the face of authoritarianism, warning further that she views dissent as an evil too dangerous to allow. Now I just want to play a short clip of Mark Stain from GBN in England.
World is very weird at the moment. A seemingly pleasant young lady won the Italian election on Sunday, and immediately the Western media got stuck in on the old Mussolini-Hitler comparisons.
This year marks the 100th anniversary of Mussolini's historic march on Rome, plunging the country into two decades of dictatorship, an alliance with Hitler, and a Second World War. Today, his fascist party is gone, but many say she is carrying the torch.
Aha. Gotcha. So that's the new Hitler, even though she hasn't got a mustache. Not even a faint whisper of one that might benefit from a touch of IMAC. But notwithstanding her lack of facial hirsuteness, 10,000 miles from Giorgia Meloni's upper lip, Australian homosexuals are fleeing in terror. Headline from the number one newspaper in Perth, the West Australian. Election of far-right Italian government prompts warnings for LGBT QWERTY community to rethink travel plans. Wait a minute, this is Australia. For most of the last 2.5 years, it's been illegal for Australians to have any travel plans. In Melbourne, you were forbidden to travel more than 3 miles from your home. In Adelaide, you and your baby were forbidden to travel to Sydney for life-saving heart surgery, not available in your own state. So you had to rethink your travel plans, and your kid had to die. At least 4 of them did. And nationwide, if you were minded to fly to Italy for a homophobic holiday, you couldn't, because no one, Australian or otherwise, could get in or out. And if the government did occasionally give permission for a foreigner to enter, as they did with the tennis player Novak Djokovic, it was only so they could arrest him and then kick him out again to teach him a lesson. And have him make a 20,000-mile round trip for nothing. Australia only restored freedom of movement, 20 minutes ago, and they're already itching to restrict it again. Italy, in this case, is like a Sydney children's hospital, and all these LGBT QWERTY blokes are like newborn infants who shouldn't be going there. We're going to discuss Giorgia Meloni with our favourite Australian, Alexandra Marshall, a little later, but I make the point only to emphasise that nothing the distaff Mussolini has done is anywhere near as weird or totalitarian as the stuff all the nice, respectable people say and do every day of the week now. It's Australia and Canada that restrain freedom of movement, not the new Hitler. It's YouTube that abolishes freedom of speech, not Giorgia Meloni. On yesterday's show, Ava Vladinger-Broek mentioned these remarks from Signora Meloni.
C'è quella che ci facciamo oggi. Perché la famiglia è un nemico? Perché la famiglia fa così paura?
Yeah, why is the family so frightening? I can't say I'm a woman, I can't say I'm a mother, I can't say I'm an Italian, I can't say I'm a Christian. This video proved very popular on YouTube, so popular that YouTube then removed it for, quote, violating its community guidelines. So just in case you're having difficulty keeping score here, Giorgia Meloni is the fascist, but being opposed to freedom of speech is perfectly respectable. Oh, and the nice, normal types are only just warming up here. We need to end 12,000 years of agriculture and get everyone eating insects. Perfectly routine. What's the big deal? As they say on The Simpsons, don't have a cow about it, have a cockroach instead. And we need to abolish the internal combustion engine, the principal method of individual human travel for the last century. We need to get rid of it by the year 2030. Let me see, 2030, that's 8 years' time. Yeah, what's your point? It's all part of the so-called Great Reset. If you go on about the Great Reset on Facebook or Twitter, you'll get labelled as fake news. So don't take my word for it. Here, after a warm-up from that nice, harmless Klaus Schwab fellow, is the new head honcho.
Now is the historical moment, the time, not only to fight severe virus, but to shape the system.
We have a unique but rapidly shrinking window of opportunity to learn lessons and reset ourselves on a more sustainable path. It is an opportunity we have never had before and may never have again. So we must use all the levers we have at our disposal, knowing that each and every one of us has a vital role to play.
His Majesty the King. By the way, when he says that each and every one of us has a vital role to play, your vital role is working less, earning less, driving less, eating less, heating less. Mark Morano is the author of a new book called The Great Reset, and we're going to get into all that momentarily with him. How weird are these times? So weird that we have statistically undeniable excess mortality. That means a huge mountain of extra corpses in Australia and New Zealand, in North America, in Europe, and yes, in the United Kingdom. Who's dying? The middle-aged, in the prime of life. Young persons taking their first steps on what should have been the long road of adulthood, and most tragically of all, large numbers of adolescents whose journey had yet to begin. You'd almost get the impression that for many people, the vital role each and every one of us has to play, as His Majesty says, is apparently to drop dead. But that's not the weird part. The really weird part is that huge numbers of dead people is about as basic as it gets, and yet no one in the media talks about it.
And here's Mark Morano on the same show.
Once COVID lockdowns came, in the words of the House of Commons speaker, I think his name was Lindsay, he said, at how compliant the public was during COVID. Now it's time to go after climate. They knew that they had conditioned us to accept and be compliant, and now they want to pounce on climate. And that's really what's propelling the Great Reset. The whole world, like lemmings, jumped off a cliff and started copying the most insane authoritarian response, literally of nailing people in their home while you're wearing hazmat suits. That's what the once free West emulated. And I can't explain it other than this was unchecked ideology for years. They had never been challenged in their own world. In other words, the Justin Trudeaus and the Ardern of New Zealand and Australian Prime Minister, they had just been in echo chambers, and this all sounded like a good idea. And at the time, hey, we've always been like China. Let's do what they're doing. And the World Health signs off on it. And so that's what happened.
Well, you're right about the Aussies and the Kiwis. What surprises me after the last couple of years, because I always love that fantastic bit of American English, ornery. Like, the Americans are supposed to be ornery, and it doesn't really have an equivalent in Britannic English, that word. And what was a bit shocking to me was how half the American people were willing to put up with this. But when they're talking about getting rid of basically individual car ownership by 2030, that's real.
That's real. And here's what they're doing. First, let's talk first about the cars. No one voted for that. Gavin Newsom in California did an executive order. The California Air Resources Board, an unelected, unaccountable bureaucracy, came up with the timetable, the 2035, and with strict limits going up to it. 17 states, including my home state of Virginia, have a trigger law to follow it. Our transportation secretary loves it so much, they're now looking at it as a federal mandate. The World Bank president, former president Nicholas Stern, says we have to look at timetables for ending this. So the World Bank's telling automakers cars ending. A bank in Australia won't even give you a car loan if you want to buy a gas-powered car. We didn't vote for this. They're taking away our meat, our gas-powered cars, our free speech, and our agriculture, forcing us to eat insects. We didn't vote for any of it. We didn't vote for lockdowns. We didn't vote for mask mandates. These were all done through emergency decree, through unelected bureaucracy. That is what the Great Reset is. Think back to China one-party rule. They don't want any stinking democracy.
So folks, back to where I started in this video. The elite, well, they're not really elite, that's what they like to think of themselves as. The controllers behind the scenes are sending their little puppets that they put in power to Davos and to Klaus Schwab's School of Young Global Leaders, etc., then sticking them in positions where they have control of countries. And financially, you have unelected people like BlackRock that control finances, that Pfizer that puts money into the media, etc. And then they control the narrative. That's the goal, the Great Reset, New World Order, beast system, whatever you want to call it, is the goal. And you and I, as average people, are being shut out of having any real say. And that is where this is going. No wonder the world is a complete shambles. These godless Luciferians, by and large, that are behind the scenes with their puppets in power, are controlling the system. And it's time, folks, that we just realize we've got to get our eyes on the Lord. Really, there's no other answer, because tougher and tougher times are ahead of us. And we've got to do what we can to prepare spiritually and physically at this point in time, I believe. So that's all I wanted to really cover in this video. Please remember to subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com. And also, A Minute to Midnight's run 100% by donations. I know times are tough for people, but we can't run this without your help. So if you want to help us out through donating, that's always hugely appreciated. God bless, and hopefully we'll be back with a video in the not too distant future.